So we're now starting show number what? Your microphone is that big black thing in front of you.
Oh. Hi. You know what happened? I got lazy there during the Sox game. I just
during that exciting Sox win.
Yeah, right. In the alternate universe that you live in.
Yeah.
This is show number 6,327, and I would be the Johnny, and he would be the...
Steve, it says here on the script.
And we look the same on the radio.
And in the 35 years that we've been at this radio station, it's 6,327. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But who's counting?
Yeah. Well, we came in with plans for a three-hour show, and those of you who are familiar with what we do know that we bring about 8 hours worth of stuff in for
it's
a three-hour show. But now 45 minutes of that is gone, so we have eight hours worth of stuff to fit into 2 hours and 15 minutes.
We have some fun people to introduce you to, or... You might say, oh, it's great to hear him again after all these years.
Well, for example, a little later tonight, we're going to be talking with our friend Tommy Emmanuel. For those of you who may not be familiar with Tommy, he is not he may be the best guitar player on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy is going to be in the Chicago area in a couple of weeks. And also a new movie all about Tommy is premiering now in Nashville. So we'll talk about that. Also, a little later tonight, we will introduce you to an old friend, Patrick Crispin, Dr. Patrick Crispin.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk a little bit about smart device data harvesting.
Like my Fitbit. I was outraged to find out that this Fitbit that I wear 24/7. I mean, I literally only take it off to take a shower, and sometimes I don't even take it off to take the showers because it's water resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And to find out that...
Wait a minute. So they're documenting when you're in the shower. Wait a minute.
I guess.
Now, I got a real problem with that. I'm sorry.
So this data, how many hours I sleep or don't sleep, how much of it is REM sleep, how many steps. Like last week, I got a badge. I've walked the distance of Italy.
Wait a minute. You always have that on, don't you?
I always have it on, yes.
You don't mean that they've...
They always have it on.
Oh, dear.
So, privacy, that's what we're going to talk about. Smart devices and your privacy. And who has access to that information, and how can you protect that information?
And also, we're going to update you on a few friends.
Mm-hmm.
On a new CD that is coming out. That is a tribute to a friend who unfortunately is no longer with us. And it has one of my most recent recordings. And all of the proceeds are going to a good cause. We'll tell you about that a little later, too.
And by the way, Steve did go through puberty while we were not here for a few months.
Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby.
So now I'm married to Barry White.
No, I think I've got the John Hansen bug.
Yes, the creeping crud.
Yeah, heard him talking about that. So basically, with a combination of John and me, don't get too close to your radio.
Oh, no, snuggle
Hopefully
up.
Hopefully we're not.
No. Go ahead,
okay, snuggle up.
Protect you. Snuggle up to your radio.
Okay. Well, we're going to segue down south in just a couple minutes, but we'll take a break. Stay with us at WGN Radio.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log.
Well, that seemed only appropriate for Labor Day.
Yes. But we don't want you sleeping. We want you to hang around with us. We're here till 1 o'clock, and we've got, as you said, we've got 8 hours of programming to squeeze in the next few minutes. And one of the really important things that we want to spend some time talking about is this history-making storm that is just unbelievable. Hurricane Dorian. And we just returned from Panama City Beach, where we were locking everything down, dropping the hurricane shutters, bringing all the furniture in, just because at that time, just a few days ago, there was talk that it could go across the state and end up in the panhandle that was absolutely devastated by Hurricane Michael.
And is still dealing with a lot of that devastation.
Oh, yes. Another Cat 5, and that was just about 11 months ago. Now, this one is just crawling, and you know that scientists and meteorologists are saying, what is going on? Have we ever seen anything like this? And that's what we wanted to spend a few minutes and talk about.
And one of the people that we spent a lot of time with while we're down there at in Panama City Beach, he doesn't know it, but we're spending a lot of time watching him and getting information from Chris Smith. He is the chief meteorologist at WJHG-TV in Panama City Beach. And before that, Chris was a meteorologist for CNN, CNN International, and HLN. And he's pretty much our go-to source for anything that impacts the state of Florida. And in the case of a hurricane like Dorian, it was just a no-brainer to see if Chris could stay up with us and give us the latest. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Wonderful. How are you all doing?
Good. The last time we talked to you on this here radio station was the night before Michael made landfall. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not something that I care to ever do again, but y'all were down this week, I guess.
Yes.
We just got back last Tuesday, and so we were paying attention to everything that was going on down there and locking things up, and as Johnny said, pulling down the hurricane shutters. So now things have kind of changed. It doesn't look like it's going to impact all of the state of Florida as much as had been predicted, but now it's heading farther north and is going to have a significant impact on a number of states along the eastern coast, correct?
Yeah, it's, you know, and the funny thing is, though, like talking about like even, let's see, like last Tuesday, Wednesday, when it was looking like it might cut across the peninsula and into the panhandle somewhere, the fine line between that and what seems like it's going to happen, which is kind of like this brush with the East Coast, is it's so small. And, you know, a lot of times folks get a little fussy because they feel like, oh, we're prepared and, you know, we didn't really have to and everything's fine. But, like, that difference between what would have caused it to cut across the state and turn up and what's happening now isn't all that much. And when you understand, like, the limitations of the science of meteorology, as much as we know, and it's amazing in ways that you think about, like, oh, the fact that we can even see that there's a system and know, you know, kind of have an idea of what it's going to do, those subtle differences that cause it to turn later, earlier, get stronger or weaker, whatever it may be, it's, you know, those are just limitations that we have to understanding. And so now we have an idea, you know, here we are, you know, 100 plus miles off the coast of the United States. And it looks like it's going to be more of a broad brush. But even the Carolinas, North Carolina, South Carolina, I can't rule out a landfall there. But you're still going to see some pretty decent impacts across the east coast of Florida, Georgia, up into South Carolina. We have hurricane warnings pretty much to the Georgia border, and then hurricane watches after that. But you're going to still see some storm surge, you know, but it's going to be a whole lot better than what the folks in the Bahamas have been dealing with, especially northwestern Bahamas, Abacos, and Grand Bahama Island, which honestly are going to be devastated and probably not livable for a while.
Unbelievable video coming out of those areas. It's just, it's actually hard to watch the storm surge, the flooding. And part of the problem is it's moving so darn slow. What is it moving at now, and why? Why is it so slow?
It's stationary right now. Can you imagine?
Wow.
So, like during Hurricane Michael, we had here in the Panhandle, in the worst hit areas, Panama City, eastward, Mexico Beach, those areas, it was moving at about 12 to 15 miles an hour, and they had roughly the worst of the conditions for about 2 hours. At the TV station where I was at during the storm, we had it for about 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. You're talking about places now that are seeing Category 5, 4 conditions for 48 hours straight.
Oh, golly.
To give you an idea of, like, and you guys know, and the folks that are listening tonight probably haven't been down here to see what it's like. But, you know, I drove to Tallahassee on Saturday, and it still takes your breath away when you see the amount of damage coming up on a year after the storm. And so to think about that's what happened in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this storm, you know, yes, probably a little bit stronger, but for 24 to 48 hours, it's heartbreaking. Lord knows the Bahamas, they don't have the resources that the United States has to, you know, withstand this, recover from it. And so it's heartbreaking to think about what they're dealing with down there.
I just can't imagine what they'd be dealing with, because even now when we go down to Panama City Beach and we drive over into Panama City and farther east, there are areas that are still, all this time later, like a war zone, like it happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, there may not even be parts of the Bahamas may just be washed away.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's being extreme, right, Chris? I mean, the topography is so different, too. Once you take those palm trees down, what do you got?
The only thing I would say, the only saving grace is that, you know, the Bahamas are made out of basically coral reefs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're better able to withstand a hurricane. But, you know, I mean, you're talking about entire islands that are going to be underwater, you know. So, you know, all the structures are going to have water inside them.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to have, I mean, you know, they have different trees, obviously, than the Panhandle. But you're still talking about deforestation, having to deal with winds like that. And, you know, if you've been down here, I mean, you know, all the trees are, we lost, you know, anywhere between 50 and 80% of our trees
gone
in the Panhandle.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And now we're talking about, I guess, over a million people are under this evacuation order, because if it continues going up the coast, just think of all the people that live along the coast. That's pretty mind-boggling, too. Is there any chance, are there any models that are showing this taking a sharp right turn and just going away from the continental United States?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that, you know, there's a high likelihood that, you know, most of the models tonight show this thing staying offshore, meaning that the worst of the center of the storm, if you look at most of the computer models, will stay off the East Coast, barely. But the thing is, you have to understand that the limitations of the science are such that it's not a guarantee. You know what I mean? So it's like, hey, I'm going to walk across the street, and there's a 10% chance that if I walk across right now that a truck is going to hit me.
Right.
Well, there's a 90% chance that it's not, but do you really want to get hit by a truck, even at a 10% chance? You know, and so that's unfortunately, you know, part of it is that, you know, you could say, hey, there's a good chance that it's not going to directly hit you, but the reality is if you get hit by it, if it is that 10% chance that, you know, you're talking about a huge loss of life.
Sure.
You know, and if you come back even to, like, Hurricane Michael here in the Panhandle, and I don't even think that people here understand it, that if that storm had come 15 miles west and, say, come into Panama City Beach, that would have put the full brunt of the storm surge that was, you know, 15 to 20 feet that went into Mexico Beach.
Right.
If that went up the St. Andrews Bay, that would have put Panama City, Lynn Haven, so much of the population base that didn't evacuate underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not have had Katrina fatalities because we don't have the population of New Orleans, but you would have had an incredible loss of life because of it. And it was 15 miles. And the reality is the science of meteorology can't be so specific with a hurricane, because 15 miles is not that much of a difference.
So we pray. We pray real hard that it just continues up the coast. Are we hoping that it picks up speed? Is that what we're hoping for, that it just moves out of the Bahamas where it's stationary and just gets out of the way and...
Well, it is, and it's going to start moving. And unfortunately, part of this process of it stalling out tonight, and, you know, trudging along, and while it's terrible for them, it's actually good news from the standpoint of that this is what was going to have to happen. We knew that it was going to stall, and then that movement would begin to the northwest and eventually to the north. So as we move into the day tomorrow, it will continue to move away from the northwestern Bahamas. It will get closer to, say, like the Space Coast of Florida.
Right.
By Wednesday night, it's going to be up near the Georgia-Florida border, not on the border, but, you know, at the same latitude. And then it will begin that turn to the northeast. Now, when that happens will be critical, because that will mean, you know, does it make landfall in, you know, upper north, South Carolina? Does it make landfall in North Carolina? Those are all still possibilities.
Right.
Hopefully it doesn't end up happening. But the process of this thing moving, what's causing it to stall now, and then what's going to end up picking it up, which is a big trough that's swinging through your part of the country, that's what's going to start moving this thing. So it's just kind of like stalling. The trough starts coming in, and it will pull it up and push it out. Hopefully push it out fast enough that it doesn't come into contact with any more land.
Got it.
Well, Chris, as always, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and thank you for what you do and for the extraordinary job that you did during Hurricane Michael and for what you do every day. Thank you.
Hey, it's no problem at all. And next time y'all come down, we'll go to Dusty's and meet up.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much,
Thanks
Chris.
A lot, Chris.
That's Chris Smith, chief meteorologist at WJHG-TV in Panama City Beach. We know him. I mean, if there's something going on, he's there around the clock. I mean, like a Tom Skilling. They just eat this stuff up.
Yeah. We got a lot more coming up after the news break. We're going to check in with Tommy Emmanuel. So stick around. Chicago Stories. Told every day, 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say, play WGN radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Lindemann Chimney and Fireplace.
And with our news update, here's Vic Vaughn.
At least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know damn well I won't. Working for a living, working. Working for a living. Working for a living, damn it, I don't work. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living.
Love me some Huey Lewis in the news.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was one of the best concerts we saw. And
hands
that was, how long ago was it? It was about 3 years ago?
Yes, it was. And we saw him down in Panama City, in fact.
Yeah.
Sold out show. He gave it all. And I guess he's not touring because of health reasons now?
It something to do with his hearing. He's got a problem with his ears.
Is it tinnitus?
I guess I'm not sure if it's tinnitus. I read the story when he had originally talked about it. Mm-hmm. I think he's getting better. In fact, I believe that Huey and some of the members of the news have gone back in the studio and they're working on a couple
Good.
Of projects. But as far as touring, nothing is happening yet. By the way, for those of you that were expecting to hear Tommy Emmanuel, so are we. And Ashley is trying to get in touch with Tommy, and hopefully Tommy will join us in a little bit. And whenever he does, that's fine.
He is hands down the hardest working man in show business.
Yep.
He does over 300 shows a year. Now, just think about that. How many days that's crazy.
Yeah.
There are times when he does two shows in a day, and maybe even three with a clinic and things like that. And I think sometimes he stops and says, okay, I'm going to be ready for you. And he makes the mistake of closing his eyes for
a five-minute nap.
And
honestly, that
happens.
We're not making excuses. This is reality.
Yeah.
We know Tommy. We love him.
You talk about working for a living. The man gives it 150%.
But this gives us a chance to talk about some of the things that we were going to talk about at 10 o'clock. And the Sox were still playing. And by the way,
lollygagging.
I tease about the Sox. I love this. I am so excited. And I'm not saying it just because they're on WGN. I have always been a Sox fan. And I think the Sox, they're in a rebuilding mode. They're obviously not going to the World Series this year. But I wouldn't count them out over the next couple of years. The next 1 or 2 years,
there
it's going to happen.
There have been some really exciting games this season.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when it gets down to like the ninth inning and they decide, oh, yeah, I guess we could win this after all. Let's do that.
Let's do this thing.
And listen to me. I'm talking about baseball. I'm the same woman who spent a weekend watching Little League World Series. It was the most exciting entertainment I've had in a long time.
It was one of the most surprising things. I don't even remember. I think I had read or heard something about the Little League series. And
because
we were in Panama City
South,
Beach.
Yes, and New Orleans was, they were crazy about the team that was
series. On a Friday night, we tuned in, just for the heck of it, and they wound up winning it. And that meant that they were going on to play in the World Series Saturday. And they won that. And then they were going to play against the international winner on Sunday, and they won that. And New Orleans had never, ever done this. And it was so much fun to see, I think, the pureness of the sport.
Sportsmanship was outstanding. When the pitcher accidentally hits a batter,
and you knew it was an accident.
Oh, yeah. And the batter walks to first base, and the pitcher walks over and fist bumps him, and you can read his lips when he says, "Hey, man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that." But my favorite moments were when they won, and they're not actually from New Orleans, but New Orleans had adopted them because this is the first time Louisiana had gone this far in a World Series, and then to win the World Series. But they actually, each one of them had a baggie, and they scooped up a little bit of dirt and put in the baggie.
Yeah.
And I'm crying like a baby. I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. Look
it
at these kids.
Just when each of the batters, and who is the kid?
Reese Russell.
Remember that name, yep. Reese Russell.
If I had a team, I'd be talking to his parents now.
Absolutely. Now, these kids, they're not even in their teens.
Yeah.
This kid was so good. And in Little League baseball, you don't see the kind of home runs that you do in Major League baseball. The kids are younger. It's a different material that the bats are made out of. And this kid wound up hitting grand slams. I mean, he got a hit just about every time he came up to bat.
Oh, he actually did hold the record. He hit every single time he went up to bat, which is crazy. And I love the fact in Little League that once you get to 10 points.
If it's 10 points over your opponent, that's it. The game stops right then.
Because we're not going to let you just roll over them. And it's going to be embarrassing. And I know some people say, well, why not? Let them play the game the way it's supposed to be played. This would have been painful because the team that they were playing from Hawaii was like, who are these people? Anyway, it was exciting. It was so hot in Florida. How hot was it? We stayed inside for 3 days.
The actual temperature, and we just went down there for a short trip. We had a couple things to take care of. The actual temperature was between 80 and 90 every day, and the real field temperature was between about 110 and 116.
It's weather. Weather you can wear.
Exactly.
And hair. Give it up with the hair. Gosh. Anyway, it was nice to just zip down there, take a look at things, drop the hurricane shutters, bring the furniture in, and get the heck out of town.
While we got a couple seconds, we did want to update you on a couple things. And unfortunately, it's for those of you who have been longtime listeners, some sad news about a couple friends of ours. We have, in our blog, done several blogs. And by the way, you can follow us. Go to steveandjohnny.com, steveandjohnny.com. And we'd like you to like us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/steveandjohnnyshow. facebook.com/steveandjohnnyshow. And we do blog posts and a number of things. But we've done several blog posts over the past couple of years about Fran Tate. For those of you who may not be familiar with Fran Tate, she's an extraordinary woman. We first encountered Fran many years ago. It was a cold, cold night in Chicago. We were all whining about it. Well, how cold is it? And it must be colder someplace. And we checked, and sure enough, it was colder in Barrow, Alaska. So we called up to Barrow, Alaska, wound up talking to the police chief. He said, "You got to talk to Fran Tate." We wondered who this Fran Tate was. We soon found out Fran was a pioneering woman. She had gone up to Barrow, Alaska to be an engineer with the helping to build the pipeline.
And if you don't know your geography, Barrow's at the top of the world.
Yeah.
It is the most remote area that you can imagine.
And when Fran got there, she found out there wasn't any good restaurant up there, so she started a restaurant. She found out they didn't have a good sewage disposal system, so she started that.
They didn't have running water, so I'll just have water delivered to them.
Yeah. She's a real unique, wonderful pioneer woman and a funny lady. We had so much fun with her, we wound up calling her on a regular basis. And you were so wonderful to her that many of you wound up sending her gifts. And Fran is the kind of person that can never take anything from anyone without giving back. So about a year into the mission, she called us and said, "What's your favorite charity?" We said, "Children's Memorial Hospital." So for a couple years in a row, at her own expense, Fran flew from Barrow to Chicago, dressed up as the Easter Bunny, and we took Fran around to the kids at Children's Memorial Hospital, and she would give out gifts to the kids, the gifts that she had paid
right.
for.
Hundreds of gifts, quality gifts that she had paid for.
You'll also see Fran on The Best of Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show. Fran was the only guest that caused Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show to cancel all the rest of his guests. He was as taken by her as we were. Anyhow, long story short, over the past several years, Fran has been dealing with some health problems. There was, unfortunately, a fire at Pepe's many years ago. Pepe's burned down. And for the past about year and a half, 2 years, Fran has been in a facility dealing with some serious health problems.
Right. Well, diabetes was really... She talked often about it on the radio, about how you had to be careful diabetes was a real challenge for her, and that was really the start of her health problems. And then ultimately she developed a form of dementia too.
Yeah.
Yet our listeners continued to send her cards and letters, and the people who cared for her said that she did react when she would get more cards to put on her wall. So again, we thank you for that. That was wonderful.
And you can tell what we're leading up to. We heard a couple weeks ago from Fran's family, and unfortunately, Fran passed away.
On July 26th, your birthday.
Yeah.
And her family said it wasn't a surprise, but she was such a force. This little tiny blonde.
You never wanted to count her out.
Oh, golly, no. No. She was a whirling dervish. When she came to town, we would whine because we couldn't keep up with her. And she was in her 80s at that point. We're like, oh, gosh. But she was go, go, go all the time. And so exciting to have known her and to call her a friend and allow her to be a part of our radio show. That meant an awful lot to her, too.
Yeah.
She was a disc jockey up in Barrow, Alaska, playing jazz music. And
Jazz Below Zero, she called it.
Yep, and she loved radio. So, again, thank you all that were a part of her life and made her feel loved in the lower 48, as she liked to say.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a very special lady, and we were very fortunate to be on the planet at the same time she was.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll take a break, and more coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
Seems to last forever, and time goes slowly by.
we're getting every last drop out of these work songs we possibly can. Sheena Easton, she was one of the most fun interviews, one of the nicest people.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Well, she was.
Got to interview Sheena Easton.
Well.
That was before me.
That was. It was before we started dating.
Did you get her autograph?
No. It was a phone interview.
Oh, okay. Then I'm all right with that. Because she's so darn cute.
She was just absolutely delightful. And I wound up having her on the show a couple times. And just as sweet. And she had that little bit of a Scottish, English accent. And just...
What was it? Scottish or English? Because people are listening carefully.
I know.
By the way, in baseball, it's runs and not points. I said points. I said I was new to this. Come on, people.
The point is they were winning. The point is they were winning.
Yes. Not the runs they were winning.
That's
but,
right.
Well, anyway. By the way, speaking of text and people responding at 312-981-7200, I'd like to shout out to Jerry in Kansas, who's listening to us. Northwest Arkansas checked in. The Northern Florida checked in. Okay. I sent him a text back.
What part of Northern Florida?
That's what I said. Where are you listening to us in Northern Florida? Probably Destin, maybe up in that area. Not too far from us.
Pre-internet, we used to get messages from people listening in Destin, Florida. In fact, I'll do a blatant plug for this blowtorch. While we're down in Panama City Beach, in fact, I was talking off the air with some of the engineers earlier, with Adam Phillips, who's handling the engineering chores tonight. And he was surprised to hear that when we're down in Panama City Beach, Florida, at night, basically starting around, I want to say, about 10, 11 o'clock till about 5 in the morning, this puppy comes in like a local station down there. And that's not talking internet, just talking over the air. And that's always kind of fun.
And as we move into fall,
as the shadows get longer, the signal gets stronger.
And back in
Ashley,
the days,
did they teach that to you in broadcasting school? As the shadows get longer,
the signal gets stronger.
They did not, but I like it.
That's on page 16, subchapter 6.
In my textbook?
Yes.
Let me pull it out.
Yes. we used to say that, though, because our world would change as the seasons changed because the signal did get farther. And this was before we had internet access. But that truly did change our life because then all of a sudden people could communicate with us via text, which I love, love, love. So text me. I love to be texted. But if you want to call us, you're welcome to do that, too, at 312-981-7200.
Yeah. By the way, Ashley is producing on the other side, and this is our first time working with Ashley. And we found out that she's a keeper because she likes old school rock and roll. So, yeah,
hey,
Ashley.
Hey, I'm right there because as a Southerner, her last name just melts my heart. Her last name is Byhun. Because how often do I say to you, Byhun?
Yeah.
That's me.
That's her. Yes.
What was your first rock concert?
My first rock concert was probably Moody Blues.
Oh,
nice way to start. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, my mom is a huge Moody Blues fan. We grew up listening to it in our house, and we got to see them over at Ravinia, was it 2 summers ago?
Wow.
So I've seen a lot of, like, folk people in concert.
Okay.
I actually saw Celtic Thunder. I'm not Irish at all,
but
we saw them. That was my first concert ever, and they were awesome.
That's pretty amazing.
But, my first rock concert and that type of era music that I grew up listening to was Moody Blues, and it was amazing. I'll wear a shirt around and people are always like, do you even know who they are? And I'm like, I do, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I've seen them. Come on. Where did your mom go to school?
She went over to RB, which is Riverside Brookfield High School.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You know, I was waiting for you to say Northside. I was going to go, we probably knew each other.
What would be your best rock concert?
My best rock concert?
Because I think the Huey Lewis at Chipotle, that reminded me of just how good he is in concert.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of concerts. I mean, Paul McCartney was pretty darn good. Garth Brooks was pretty awesome.
While you're thinking, I'll tell you my best rock concert weekend.
Oh, you braggart.
And this was I can die now. This was back in 1972 on a Sunday night. And this is when he was still looking good, sounding great. Saw Elvis at the Chicago Stadium. Next night, at the amphitheater, Rolling Stones with Stevie Wonder as their opening act.
Oh, wow.
So Elvis, Stone, Stevie Wonder. I'm good.
How did Stevie Wonder get as an opening
act? And this was in 1972.
Yeah, because he was already huge.
And now this is name dropping, but I will.
I know.
I was sitting right next to Gene Chandler, the Duke of Earl, at the concert. I really, really was.
This is too weird.
I know, but it was...
And you didn't go there with him?
No, just went up.
Was he dressed really cool and you knew that he was Gene Chandler, the Duke of Earl?
I had interviewed him previously, so I knew who he was.
Is that how you knew he was?
No, he didn't walk in with a top hat and the scepter and the whole thing. No.
I am the Duke of Earl.
Okay, you've had your chance and your time. Now, what was your best concert?
Well, I actually have a sad story.
Oh, dear.
The best concert that I think I would have seen, I had tickets to go, but I couldn't go. Something came up, another obligation came up, and it was going to be Chicago and REO Speedwagon last summer.
Oh, boy.
And it pains me to this day that I couldn't go to that concert, but that would have been amazing. I saw a bunch of videos from it from people that went. And
of course you did.
I was like, oh, that could have been me. I had tickets to go. But I can't really think. I saw, I got to see... I'm blanking on the name, but it was Train and the Goo Goo Dolls. That's who I got to see recently.
Cool.
And that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're more modern. Mm-hmm. But I still, to this day, I told my parents, I'm like, we should go see, REO Speedwagon, because they were coming back, and mm-hmm. Boston, they were coming back, but they just weren't coming back together. And I'm just like, oh, mm-hmm. I could have had them both. So it makes me sad, but... Still listening.
You've
to
got
music,
a you've got a life to live, and these people keep coming around.
It's true.
So there's always
true.
A chance. Yes,
it is true. You got to see them while you can.
If you ever get the chance to see Chicago, go. An extraordinary.
I love Chicago. Group. They are amazing. I weirdly enough will work out to their music.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay.
I feel like they're not workout music songs, but I'll be running to like "You're the Inspiration," and I'm mm-hmm. like, "Yes, here we go."
They're singing to me.
Yeah, it's me while I'm running on the treadmill.
This will date me. But absolutely true. Before I decided to do this for a living, I spent a lot of years as a rock and roll musician doing sessions and on the road. And one of the groups before the last group that I had, some of the members of Chicago were in my group.
Really?
Peter Cetera played bass for me on one of the records that I cut. And Marty Greb, who went on to be with the Buckinghams. And Marty
loved the Buckinghams.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Marty is still alive and well. He played with the band.
There's something in the water on the South Side.
Yeah,
there really was. Seriously, there's a story to be told about the talent that was there during the '60s, and it's pretty amazing. Shout out to Naples, Florida. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Also, Dallas, Texas. Nice to have you along as well.
Hey, Dallas, Texas.
We
should shut up and do a break, right? Okay, I'm going to shut up. You can hit whatever it is you want to hit. That's jazz aficionados probably know that. That's Work Song. Get it? Work Song, mm-hmm. Labor Day. And that's
I love this.
Yeah. That's some fun stuff.
West Montgomery,
exactly. I would like to ask you to go ahead and get a pen or pencil, because we're going to give you some information about something that we hope you'll pay attention to. We're trying to help out some people, and this is a partly personal story. As you know, we spend a lot of time down in the Panhandle.
We don't live there full time, by the way.
No.
For people who are texting tonight saying, oh, you came back to visit us. No, we actually live here.
Yeah, we live here. We kind of split our time, but it's... Mm-hmm. And while we were down in the Panhandle... I've been working on some songs for a while, and been gradually getting around to recording some things. And those of you who have been with us for a long time know of our friendship with Les Paul. And we wrote a book about our friendship with Les. The book is called A Little More Less. And yes, that's still available. You can go to A Little More Less, spell less with one S, a little more less.com. You can still order the book. And after a while, I just had the idea to do a medley of some of the songs that were most associated with Les. And I took How High the Moon, which was one of his biggest hits, and It's Been a Long, Long Time, which was really the first song that gave any degree of national spotlight to Les when he recorded it with Bing Crosby. And then Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which was a song that Les had performed with Judy Garland and one of the songs that was in every Les Paul concert that we ever saw. And I had the idea to go into a studio. There's a wonderful studio in Lynn Haven, Florida. It's called Studio 812, and a friend of ours, Tom Hoots, runs the studio. Wanted to go in there and record it, but the arrangement I came up with was a kind of an unusual arrangement because at times not only are you shifting songs, you're at times shifting tempos, at times there's no tempo, so I needed a musician that had a lot of really good chops. Asked around, and our friend Michael Lister, those of you who have been with us for a while, you know, we've had Michael on the show. He's a New York Times best-selling author who lives in the Panhandle, and Michael introduced us to a friend of his named Dave Lloyd. And Dave was a fascinating man.
Everyone who knew Dave said, oh, Dave, one of the good guys. Oh, Dave, an amazing musician.
Yeah.
A genius when it comes to music. Oh, and by the way, he's a counselor of military children. Oh, and he's a pastor, too. So if you need to be married, he can do that for you, too. A dad, and just a really funny, funny, wonderful man to be around.
I remember one night, and I wish we could remember what the specifics of this were, because we got together with Dave. We had him over to our house several times and had him over for dinner. And one night, he's sitting there, and he had this, musicians will know this thing, it's called a Chapman stick.
It's an ugly instrument. It looks like a stick.
It looks like a big, long stick with 10 strings.
Yeah.
That no normal human being should be able to play, yet alone master, and as Dave did.
He did, yeah.
So, Dave and I were able to work out an arrangement. But one night when Dave was over at the house for dinner, and he very casually mentions this song that he'd been working on, he'd gone back because he researched all kinds of languages.
And something in the Bible inspired him to look up the language that would have been spoken, and then he wrote the music based on that Bible passage. And I was like, what? Who thinks like that?
It was
incredible.
He played this thing for us, and we were in awe.
The yeah.
Point is, he was an extraordinary musician. And we went into the studio to record, and we were we had our headphones on. We did. You had the same reaction that we did. After about an hour and a half or so, it was okay, but it just didn't feel right. And at one point, I thought, okay, can we go back to the kind of feel that we had in our living room? And I said, Dave, why don't we just take off our headphones? So we took off the headphones.
And that was it.
And that was the take. Yeah, I mean, you and Tom Hoots, who was the engineer, he said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Point of all this is that Dave did a lot of traveling. As you said, he was a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And
he traveled to military bases,
yeah,
all around the country, all around the world. In fact, he'd been in the Netherlands and Spain, and he happened to be in Japan last summer when he had a heart attack. And at the age, he was going to be 54 years old, he passed away, leaving four daughters, And those daughters are just amazingly talented, too. Yeah. And we had an opportunity to meet them at Dave's funeral. And Michael Lister and some of the other folks in this really creative community in the Panhandle decided that they wanted to do something for Dave's daughters to show how much they loved him and appreciated his talent.
And Michael contacted us and asked if we wanted to be involved, and we said, sure. So there is a CD that has come out, and here's where I want you to get your pens and pencils. The CD has come out, and a lot of us have just donated our time to this. Nobody is making any money off of this. Trust me, none of us are making penny one, because we want all of the profits for the CD to go to help Dave's daughters go to
college. Music school,
yeah,
buy
whatever.
A guitar, whatever it takes to make their lives full.
The CD is called Into the Mystic. It's a Dave Lloyd tribute album, and there are 16 tracks on it by some people whose names you may not know, but trust me, they are some of the most talented people on the Gulf Coast. Just some wonderfully talented people. Michael Lister has a couple cuts on there. And there's a track that Dave and I did together is on there too, and I want to let you hear it. The CD is going to be available actually within the next week or so, and you can get it by going to michaellister.com/Dave-Lloyd. So, michaellister.com/Dave-Lloyd. And you'll see there's links there, and you can buy the CD. And I hope you will, and I'll give you the address again. But just to give you a sample of what is on there, I was so proud that they decided they wanted this. And I'm stumbling because every time I listen to this, I find it very sad to think that I'll never be able to play this song this way again. Because what Dave did, I did the arrangement and I'm playing the lead guitar. But Dave is playing this Chapman stick, and it's doing chords, it's doing bass lines, it's doing everything. And that no overdubbing. This was just the two of us in the studio. And this is what it sounds like. Thank you. And what you just heard was no overdubs, no nothing. It was just we took off our headphones, and that's what we played. And that's one of the cuts that is on the Dave Lloyd Tribute CD.
And tomorrow on our Facebook page and at StephenJohnny.com, we'll have all these links. So if you're driving, mm-hmm. you're coming from O'Hare, and you can't jot anything down, please do us a favor and get your hands on some really good music. It's such a diverse selection of tunes that have been put on the CD to pay tribute to this wonderful human being.
And there are some cuts that have Dave Lloyd's daughters performing,
mm-hmm.
Some of the instrumentalists and the singers from the Gulf Coast. And just, trust me, a lot of really, really talented people. And none of us are making a penny off this CD. It is all to help Dave's daughters. And if you would please, if you're in a position to write down this address, it's michaellister.com/Dave-Lloyd. That's michaellister.com/Dave-Lloyd. And you won't be sorry. It's a really, really yeah. good CD.
And a quick answer to a question that was texted. That's Chapman, C-H-A-P-M-A-N, mm-hmm. Chapman, just like it sounds.
Chapman Stick.
Stick. It's a stick.
Yeah.
Look it,
really
it up.
Is.
It's
yeah.
an amazing instrument. It
and I still
is.
Don't know how he played it.
It's an ugly instrument that sounds so sweet. We got to take a break and come back here on WGN Radio.
It's a big job just getting by with 9 kids and a wife. But I've been a working man dang near all my life, and I'll keep on working long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working man blues.
Yeah, that's the Hag. That's the original version of Working Man Blues. And that's the last one of those songs we get to play on Labor Day.
I look forward to holidays for that reason. We have little boxes of CDs that have the appropriate songs. Like
mm-hmm.
we had to wade through our New Year's Eve songs to get to our Labor Day songs
yes.
this year. And then there's always, let's see, the 4th of July tunes. And anyway, I want to say thanks for tuning in to Kathy in Arkansas, who's headed down to Panama City Beach in October. We'll just miss her. Also,
hey,
Naples, Florida is checking in. And it's going on 7 o'clock in the morning in Budapest, Hungary, where we have a listener tuned in.
Well, how cool.
Yeah, so thanks a lot for doing that.
Is it Budapest or Budapest?
I don't know.
I think it's Budapest.
Is it runs or points? Who knows? I'm just here for the game.
By the way, do we owe you a live read, Ashley? I think we owe you a... We don't?
Hmm.
You can yell at me. So.
Oh, she's saving it till after the show.
So no?
Do we know who's coming in at 1 o'clock?
I was about to talk in your ear. I was going to say, that is a good question. I will find out for you guys. And no, you are good on the live read.
Oh, okay. Well, then...
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
We are coming up on the day that oftentimes in my life was tied with Christmas Day. I know a lot of people will find this hard to believe, but being a product of Chicago Public Schools, I lived for this day. I'm not kidding you when I say Christmas, back to school, neck and neck. Especially if it wasn't a really good year for Christmas, you know. If I
can,
been
you
a
tell
bad
we're
year.
Not exactly on the same page about this.
I was so happy to go back. So I'd be there. It would still be kind of dark out because I would be there so early, waiting for them to open the doors to let me go in so that I could help them get organized for the first day of school.
So you'd be there about the time I was just going to sleep.
You were just, exactly.
And dreading. Even before I started working in bands, for whatever reason, I was up all night.
All night.
Just listening
yeah.
to the radio, doing whatever. Listening mm-hmm. to people like us.
Mm-hmm. Reading comic books.
And, yeah. Doing
and I,
stuff.
On the other hand, I was laying out my clothes. And of course, you know, by this time we had put away all of our whites. And I started to wear white jeans tonight, and I actually realized I would be here after midnight, and I changed clothes.
Well, you notice I have segued to my fall black.
This is true. And there is a difference between summer black.
My summer black and my fall black. So.
Not fall back, but fall black.
Exactly.
So you're trying to change the subject from going back to school. I get like a little heart palpitations, but good ones. Yeah. Just the smell of those little pencil holders when you open them up.
But see, you never had to deal with the nuns who just floated through the air and had the rulers in their hands.
They would have loved me. I would have been right behind them going, yeah, get her. Well, I was kind of sort of a teacher's pet, kind of.
No.
I was an only child, and I wanted to put up a bulletin board. And so they let me do that. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have a year-round Christmas tree, because I don't have a bulletin board that I can put up every month or every week or ever how many times I want to. So that's the inspiration for my year-round Christmas tree.
And I was dealing with Sister Innocence, who was full of anything but.
Watch it.
I'm just saying.
We're on the 18th floor.
I'm just saying. Okay. That beep means good heavens. It's midnight. Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker user, just say on tune in. And do it just like that. It is midnight. And time for the news.
And with our news update, here is Vic Vaughn.
Steve and Johnny, they are good friends of mine. Well, I just tune in. WGN overnight. Steve and Johnny. Chicago's pride and joy. They give life after dark for all of us to enjoy. Yes, we enjoy. Keep it up. Keep it up and listen up, and they'll be there at your side. Life after dark is where I'll be forevermore. Evermore. Gonna be some sweet sounds. Sweet sounds. Night shift. Oh, on the night shift, you'll feel like family.
You realize we're into the last hour of the show?
I know.
It's gone by too fast.
I do enjoy hearing that song, though.
Yeah.
Stormy Weather from, oh, golly.
How many years ago?
Never mind. Moving right along. Because we have so much ground to cover in the next few minutes.
And we were having, over the past, I want to say month and a half, I don't know how many times there have been conversations where we said, why did this suddenly show up in my feed?
That's not
something that we had been talking about. We had not searched for on the internet, but something had just popped up and said,
who's listening?
Oh, what the? Huh?
How do they know these things? I think the best example I gave the other day, I was talking to you about, I was really happy that leopard print was coming back in style, and I sat down and brought up my Facebook page, and the ads were for leopard print clothing. I was like, whoa, We were just having that conversation in the other room.
Yep.
This is weird. And it's if I really stop to think about it, it freaks me out because I don't know how it's happening, but it's happening.
And I had been talking about a particular kind of guitar.
Yes, and it was a weird one, too. It was not like your Strat or your Les Paul. It was something very unusual.
And all
unusual.
Of a sudden, popping up.
Yes. So then the other day, the Washington Post did a story, and I think I said at the top of the show how I wear my Fitbit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the time. And it was a Christmas gift that you gave me, and it actually stayed in the box for 8 months. And when I took it out of the box, I said, where have you been all my life? Mm-hmm. This is wonderful. Washington Post did a story the other day that said that the day may come, if it hasn't already happened, where the data that is gathered via my Fitbit, that's the hours that I sleep, mm-hmm. how much of it is REM sleep, how many mm-hmm. flights of stairs I walk, calories I burn, blah, 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 that data could be valuable to someone somewhere, or maybe the government. And I said, whoa.
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about the Apple Watch, which, again, if the Fitbit is harvesting data, you know the Apple people are doing the same thing.
And there have been stories about your smart TV. Is that TV that you're watching, watching you and listening to you?
That makes
So, point is, crazy. We decided to turn to a man who has been nice enough to join us for how many years now?
Well, he was just a kid. He was just a college kid, and now he's a doctor. He is Dr. Patrick Crispin, joining us tonight by popular demand, because when we put out the word we're going to be on the radio, people said, are you going to have Dr. Crispin on? So we do have him on the radio with us tonight. And Patrick, how are you this evening? Uh-oh.
Okay.
Wait.
I can barely hear Patrick. Okay.
Because we're talking technology.
Wait a minute. Let's try this again. Okay. Take two.
I can hum.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
There you go.
And we can't blame this on your son.
No, that was operator error. My first mistake.
Oh, you know what?
Okay.
Guess what? They're going to send you home.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, I'm probably
you're
fired.
Out of here real soon.
All right. Okay.
Well, Patrick, I know when I sent you a text the other day and I said, is this possible? I could almost hear you rolling your eyes. This has been going on for a long time, right?
Yes. First of all, your devices, your smart devices, aren't necessarily listening to you, so that when you're saying that, hey, I really like leopard print, and leopard print is showing up in your feed, it's not because some computer is listening
it
to you.
Is.
It's that some computer is predicting you.
What?
Hmm?
Pretty much, we are so absolutely tracked in everything we do, every place we go on the internet, every different like that we have on Facebook, everything that we do in Instagram or whatever, that there are now giant databases about you and people like you. And it's really relatively easy to target very, very, very specific subgroups. Like people who like rockabilly and collect guitars and live in Chicago.
And wear all black.
And root for the Sox.
Right.
and it's absolutely trivial for this. The amount of data that is available about you is just, it's overwhelming. There is actually a documentary on Netflix called The Great Hack.
Yes.
And it's talking about Cambridge Analytica and all the other things. And once you realize what's going on there, we're in a really interesting world where every one of us could be really have the advertising targeted us at just a very, very pointed way where I can sit there and say, I want people in Pasadena who blah, 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 blah. And they would track just me. The whole Fitbit thing, I think that really was a red herring. Basically, the United States government is thinking about creating this advanced research projects agency formed basically like DARPA. And DARPA was great. I mean, DARPA came up with the internet, it came up with Unix, it came up with the cloud, it came with GPS, Siri, web conferencing. And they now want to do it with health data and looking for what they are saying are neurobehavioral signs of someone headed towards a violent explosive act. Now, I can't imagine what my Fitbit would tell
I know.
that, that I'm headed to some sort of violent, explosive act. That said, if you take that data from and combine it with data from other smart devices like Apple Watches, Amazon Echo, Google Homes, along with information from your healthcare providers like the radiographs, like image analysis, like
test
your
results.
Health record,
yeah.
It's really actually pretty simple to kind of identify certain behaviors that might be a warning sign. I would also say that if you really want to track, what you would do is you track where somebody's cell phone location is. Mm-hmm. And this is where it gets real scary. And for those who are big fans of the Second Amendment, I'm going to send a chill down your spine. There's really nothing stopping the government right now tracking how many times you go to a gun range. Mm-hmm. or how many times you go hang out at certain locations by tracking your cell phones. So,
but wouldn't there have to be something that would be like a red flag that would make them look to you first?
Theoretically, but I don't think there's any law that prevents them.
Oh, yeah.
They're hoovering up everything. So what you can do is if you really want to kind of make yourself not hidden on the internet, because you can't be hidden on the internet, but some things that you could do, there is a browser plugin that I've been recommending for a long time. It's got a really silly name, and it's from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It's called Privacy Badger. And Privacy Badger works with Chrome, Firefox, Opera, Firefox on Android. And what it does is you install this little thing in your browser, and it sends a trigger to all the websites that you're visiting, say, do not track me.
Oh.
Do not track me. I don't want to be tracked. Now, if the site ends up violating that or ignoring it, what ends up happening is this Privacy Badger is going to look for tracking cookies, and if it sees the same tracking cookies on three or more different websites, it blocks those.
Oh.
So what it's meant to do is there are cookies that are being put on your computer. Some cookies are good, like you know, it's your card to get back into a website.
Right.
But some are tracking you from site to site to site. So Privacy Badger says, okay, you're looking too much information about this person. I'm going to block you, and absolutely free of charge. Does tracker blocking? It removes outgoing link clicking on Facebook, Google, and Twitter.
Does
absolutely
it just
free. Just do a Google search for EFF Privacy Badger, and I really recommend installing that on your browser.
Does
right
it
now.
Just run in the background? It just sits there until you start going out on the internet, and
it just sits there in the background running all the time. And again, the Electronic Frontiers Foundation is a not-for-profit organization that is very, very famous, highly respected, and you don't have to worry about losing any privacy.
But let me take you in a different direction, though, for a second. Somebody just texted us and says, do you have Siri or Alexia listening to you? And wasn't there something just within the past, I want to say, 2 weeks, where I honestly don't remember if it was from an Android source or if it was from Apple, where they said, oh, you know, we're not going to keep all that information, all that stuff that we've been hearing from you. So are they, in fact, when you talk to Siri, are they, in fact, keeping those things that you say to Siri or Alexa? And are they listening to them?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. you can actually listen to your Google Home recordings. There's a way in the Google privacy setting to hear everything you've asked Google. If you do it in our house, it's basically Joey asking for animal sounds. and you can hear those recordings. And the reason why they keep them is they want to train the system to recognize you better and better and better. But everything that you've searched for with Alexa, everything you've searched for with Google Home has been recorded. The scary thing is, and it's actually not technically scary if you know technology, is they have allowed third parties to listen to some of those recordings as well. And the reason why,
And this really gets to the heart of artificial intelligence and machine learning and what's going on. They're trying to get their voice recognition software to get better and better and better. And the way they have to do that is they have to check to see if what you search for is what they think you searched for. So the secret about a lot of machine learning and artificial intelligence right now is there are rooms full of Asians who are just paid, you know, subsistence wages to listen to artificial intelligence recordings and say, is this a match or not? It's just humans just clicking it and checking the work. So it's not something terribly nefarious. It feels a little icky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you thought that you were talking just to Google or talking to Amazon, and you're talking to third parties in, you know, overseas who are
okay. Let me take you in a different direction for a second, or stay with this. But is there any way to hack into Siri or Alexa or whatever and say, okay, I want my unit to learn me? That's fine, but I don't want this information going out any place. I want it just to stay on this particular hard drive in my house, period, end of story.
No, all these smart devices are connected to the cloud, and they're stored
the cloud.
Not on your devices. Mm-hmm. They're not stored on your device. They're stored up online. Now, the thing is that Google Home is sitting in the background, and it is listening, but it's not recording until you actually say the magic words. And I won't say it because I don't want everybody's smart speakers to go off at you know, this early hours in the morning. And then it will record you saying the trigger and then what you said afterwards. But occasionally, and I think we've all heard this, especially when another commercial's on TV or something else, your Alexa fires up or Google Home will fire up, and sometimes it will record those little accidental fires up, and there could be embarrassing things going on in the background. But again, there's also could be embarrassing things. If I go walk down the street right now with my cell phone out down Michigan Avenue, I guarantee you I'm going to overhear some really embarrassing conversation.
But is there a way, on a lot of computer devices, there are reset buttons that put everything back to ground zero. Is there any way, should you decide to, with Google Home, with Alexa, with Siri, whoever, is there any way to say, okay, reset it, and that deletes all the stuff that you'd put into it, and it starts from ground zero?
Yes, you can go in and hear the recordings and delete the recordings. It is a possibility in it. If you're truly concerned, deeply concerned, my recommendation is that an Alexa device or a Google Home is not for you. If you're willing to give up some of the privacy issues with it, you get a lot of great services from these things, the ability to do some really great features. I know if you're raising a kid, and you know my son's 3 years old, setting a timer on Google is one of the greatest things ever. You just say the magic word and say, set a timer for 5 minutes, and it's been great. I'm not terribly concerned that Google's listening to the stuff that I say in the background, because I'm a boring person. But yeah, I mean, this is the cost of these smart devices, is that it is tracking you. Now, if you want to, you can either not get this, you can go back and kind of set it up so that it's a little more limited. And then you also need to be aware that not only is your browser spying on you, your operating system is spying on you, especially if you have Windows 10. And there are some ways for you to protect your privacy in Windows 10 that a lot of people don't know about. And if you're thinking about upgrading to Windows 10, if you haven't yet, you need to, because, well, first of all, Microsoft is going to stop supporting Windows 7 on January 14th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is if you're going to upgrade, you're going to need to shell out the $119. It's no longer free. Sorry about that. My recommendation is get a new computer if you can afford it. But once you can get Windows 10 turned on, and even if you haven't done this, even if you have upgraded and haven't done this, there is something in Windows 10 called Advertising ID. And what it does is sort of, I'm going to oversimplify, it creates this sort of unique username for you. It's a unique number that can be based on what you visit online and what you do on your computer and how you use your computer, so that you can get more targeted advertising. You can turn off that advertising ID, and I actually really recommend doing that because it's a great way to protect your privacy. Windows 10 also has location tracking turned on. You can turn that off.
Good.
There's something in it called Timeline. And Timeline's a neat little feature if you have multiple computers, but allows you to go from machine to machine. If you aren't going to be going from machine to machine, turn off Timeline. And the other thing is, back to the Smart Assistant, Cortana, which is on Windows 10, you can turn that off completely, and that is a really good way to kind of make your computer a little safer.
Can you, at some point, send us a link to instructions for turning all of these things off, and we will post it on our Facebook page and on Twitter and on our blog, just for people who aren't, like us, are not aware of this and would like to say, okay, let me, now that I know about this, let me see if I want to do this.
And I told Patrick off the air that when we announced that he was going to be on the show, the first three responses I got were people saying, I have to upgrade to Windows 10. Yeah. And I want to know what Patrick has to say about that. Now, I've got to tell you,
it's the best operating system Windows has ever put out. It's
really?
It's a phenomenal operating system. It's brilliant. But there are some security features that you need to be aware of.
Well,
and yes, there are two great articles that I'll send you, one from Computer World on April 16th and one from PC World on July 19th, that are just phenomenally well-written. I went through both of these, and I verify these and say, yep, I agree with both of these articles.
Good.
Johnny just got a new cell phone, and with this new cell phone came a Chromebook. What operating system is on the Chromebook? We haven't even turned it on yet.
It's Chrome OS. It is Google's own cloud-based operating system.
Oh, yay.
So, the thing is, it's actually really, it's a nice computer. It doesn't run Windows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you can run Office 365 online if you have an Office 365 account. You can also use Google Docs and Google Sheets and Google Pages and all that. You know.
But by default, everything is going into Google's cloud.
Everything is Google.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to tell you guys,
it's a good computer.
The texts that are coming in are far more terrifying than my little brain could even comprehend. For example, they don't even need a machine, Johnny and Steve. Bluetooth advanced technology now allows for brain synchronization, just finding your brain wavelength, and they can hack right into it. Oh, great.
I don't think that. Okay. I've never heard of that.
Thank you. By the way,
are you sure this is an Art Bell show?
Texters want to know, what is the Badger app that Patrick talked about? That's Privacy Badger, right, Patrick?
By the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. It's available on the homepage. I very strongly recommend it.
And do you have any opinion on the Brave browser?
I know of it. I haven't tried it.
It is, as I understand it, it is based on, I think it's based on Firefox, but by default, it says, don't track me.
Ah.
So you have to go into it and say, okay, I will allow these cookies or whatever. But basically, it's a don't track me browser. It's called Brave, just the word Brave, B-R-A-V-E. Hmm.
Patrick, in the final few seconds that we have here, you have Joey, our grandbaby. We love him dearly. He has smart devices. How do you protect children from their privacy being abused and used? Or is there a way? I mean, can you go into devices that he's using and saying, no, this is just between us?
No. What you can do, though, is you can think it's sort of a higher level, and what you would need to do is make sure that young kids don't have social media accounts, limit their exposure to those sorts of things. I would go into both Google and Microsoft have great privacy pages where you can go in and kind of just check to see what your privacy settings are. Microsoft's is at account.microsoft.com/privacy, and check those. Really, you just, as a parent, you've got to you've got to be mindful of what you're putting out online. And I know that when, you know, when Joey was born, we didn't put his face online for a year.
Well, again, we could go on forever. We promised you we'd keep you for just a little bit because you're coming off a holiday weekend. You got to get back to work tomorrow. And thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you on the radio. And we'll see you in like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to
we
that.
Are
we
too.
Are too, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And for those of you who are new to our conversation, Patrick is the Director of Educational Technology and Assistant Professor of Clinical Medical Education at the Keck School of Medicine at USC. So,
and he has a trifold business card.
He does.
I know that.
He does.
And if he doesn't, he should have.
And we have a spot break coming up, and here it is. Hey, I've got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
We were talking earlier. We've been fascinated by your... going through the 100 albums.
Yes.
The last 3 months of your life,
yeah.
Is that right?
Let's see, May, June, July. Yeah, it's going into the fifth month now.
Oh, my gosh.
We started at the beginning of May.
Okay. And for people who don't know, you're actually listening to, it's the Rolling Stones list of the top 100, right?
That's correct. The top grade, you know, great albums according to Rolling Stones.
Right.
Know? I think we started talking about it in May, but I actually started it before that, about probably been going since about April.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm down to my last 10 albums on that list.
Well, here's my question, and I'll give you an example of what I'm curious about. As you have been listening to any of these albums, have any of these albums made you want to check out something else that wasn't on that list? And here's where I'm going with this. It was years ago, this must have been in the 60s, and I'd been hearing about Django Reinhardt. I had never heard Django Reinhardt, but George Harrison was raving about Django Reinhardt. And then Chet Atkins did this cut, and I was a big Chet Atkins fan, and the cut was called Django's Castle. From that, I decided, okay, if George Harrison and Chet Atkins like this guy, I might as well check him out. So, having heard no Django Reinhardt, which is weird because we would think being a guitar geek I would have, but for whatever reason I hadn't, I went into a store, Rose Records, as a matter of fact, the old Rose Records on, I think it was Wabash, and I got this, it's a double album set, and I will never forget my reaction the first time I dropped the needle on the first CD, on the first album. I started smiling. And every time I listen to Django Reinhardt, that's the reaction I have. And I became a huge Django Reinhardt fan. But had it not been for George Harrison and Chet Atkins, I never would have really paid attention to Django Reinhardt. So as you've been going through these top 100 albums, has anything you've heard made you think, oh, I should delve a little deeper and check out who or what?
Absolutely. And I was smiling while you were telling your story because I was really connecting with the way you responded, because it's the same thing's happening to me. So, and it's funny because you mentioned George Harrison. That's one of the most recent times it's happened to me, was I was listening to Abbey Road by the Beatles, the first time I'd listened to that album as a whole piece of art, you know, a whole work, and listen from start to finish. And I really got interested in George Harrison as I was reading through, finding out who wrote which songs, and one of the songs he wrote, something really, you know, hit me, and I started watching videos into George Harrison and reading more, and now, so the thing with that, though, is I've been disciplined and sticking with the list. I've only listened to one other album that was not on this list since I've begun this, because there's just so many to do when I started on this little project, and so I haven't gone down the rabbit hole, but it's happening definitely. There's so many other bands.
Two questions though. What was that one album that you listened to that wasn't on the list?
I can't remember the name of it, but it was a very it was a friend. Actually, the person who suggested it works here at this station, and it was more like a comedy. So I didn't know.
Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely bizarre. And I listened to it, and then after that, I decided I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to stick with this.
Stick with the list.
And the thing is a lot of suggestions I'm getting, they're great albums to the people who are suggesting
yes.
them. And mm-hmm. and I know that there has to be a ton of albums out there that are great, but never hit the masses, right?
Yeah.
So I'm starting
because we have our emotions and our histories tied
yeah.
up in it. You know, we think that you should be able to relate to that too.
That's a good point.
But I'm dying to know what album was 9+ hours long.
That was the one by, I believe. Yeah, that was the one that had everything that Phil Spector had ever produced.
Oh my
yeah.
god!
Yeah, it was a
Hello.
Big project.
Oh wow!
A ton of music on that one, and there's
yeah.
been a couple other ones. I want to say there was a Muddy Waters anthology, I want to say, was
yes.
almost 3 hours
yes.
long.
Yeah.
There was another one that was 6+, so another one 4+. So some of them have really been.
Was the Chuck Berry anthology on that?
That was so good.
Yeah.
Well, not the anthology. It was called The Great 28. Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah, man. I love. In fact, Steve, I have decided to do a podcast spinoff from Vic's Picks, and the first episode is going to focus on The Great 28 by Chuck Berry.
Oh, cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Now,
love
this is your Album University podcast?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And people can find this by going to your page on Facebook. Is that the best way to go about doing that?
Well, they can't find it yet because we haven't finished yet. And so we're also still building all the platforms where we'll push all this out. So
that's cool.
The episode one is almost done recording, and then we'll, of course, pitch it to the powers that be, and we'll see where it goes.
Oh, that's great. Well, we vote for it, yes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, when you do the Chuck Berry thing,
yeah.
I should put in your ears some of the Chuck Berry anthologies that I've got, because they're from the early days at Chess, and some of them are sessions where it's like 15 takes on one song.
I hate
and
that.
Some of it is just instrumental.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It's just the construction and how it all happens.
I love that.
I feel sorry
well, then
for you.
You would love one of my favorite albums, the Johnny
it's
Can't Stand.
It's coming up in the top 10.
Is it really?
Yeah, he's going to have to listen
which,
to this.
It's the Pet Sound box set.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it makes me crazy.
I love it.
I can't wait to hear it.
It is such a wonderful. It's such a wonderful peek inside at that time. Brian Wilson's head before he got really, really, really messed up. And the creative process, and you realize this guy really was a bleeping genius.
Yeah.
But it makes me weary. It's like, oh, come on.
The sound sessions are what I really loved the most when I was listening to Ray Charles. There was a rather long piece of work on that list that I listened to by Ray Charles, and you really got an idea of what a genius he was when mm-hmm. you get to hear the studio work. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You could even hear the voice of the producer or director in his ear giving him direction, mm-hmm. giving him the lines mm-hmm. of the songs, and it was amazing.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Pet Sounds is number two, so he's got that to look forward to. Number two on the top 100. And in that top 10, there's an album, number six, you will absolutely love, love, love it. What's Going On, Marvin Gaye.
Yes.
And can I just say, we just watched the Hitsville, the History of Motown documentary that's on Showtime.
Have you seen it?
No.
Watch it.
It's being replayed on Friday.
I will.
It is
must watch. It really, really
is. The segment on Marvin Gaye and What's Going On is so powerful.
Fascinating.
They take What's Going On, and they break it down track by track. Here's Marvin doing the second vocal. Here's Marvin doing the first vocal.
Then
they add drums. Marvin's
horns.
Playing the drums. And it's literally piece by piece. They show you how he put it
now
together.
Now that I love.
That's brilliant.
It's wonderful.
Because I love that album so much. I really, really enjoyed that. But this documentary is so well done. And Smokey Robinson, you got to love him. I learned so much from watching this documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, this is soundtrack of my life. And I looked at Steven and said, what? They didn't tell us that he was mm-hmm. having an affair. Not Smokey Robinson. Well, anyway, they get into all that juicy stuff that you kind of sort of thought might be going on. This was, of course, before the internet. And now these guys tell us that this was exactly what was happening in Motown.
And there was one thing that I wish they had expanded on. They talked about the Motown Review, which is where they took all the Motown acts, and they sent them out. But it was with the Motown Orchestra. And this was at a time when artists would go from city to city, but they would have to play with the local pickup band. And to take the Motown musicians, I mean, A, you were able to recreate the sound on stage that you put on the records, but also the cost of doing this was a significant expenditure to do that.
In a ratty old bus, and because they were traveling in the South and they were not allowed to stay in hotels, they were sleeping in a bus.
And who, what was it, one of the Temptations or one of the Four Tops that said they were, he, they were in this town in the South, and he went into a restroom, and all of a sudden he feels something against his head, and it's one of the local sheriffs, and he says, "You're in a white-only restroom."
Restroom. He said he didn't even know that that existed.
Just,
Whether or not you love the music the way we obviously do, if you just want a slice of America in the 60s, this documentary is
wonderful.
It's so well done. Yeah. And it's going to be replayed. I looked it up. It's going to be replayed a couple times on Friday, but just look for Hitsville. Hitsville, the history of Motown. It was this year. It's just been out a couple of weeks now. And I think it's only on Showtime. It might be on Netflix. It might be on Amazon. But, you know, seek it out. It's really worth your time.
I would definitely watch that one. And I'll also throw out with for the Chuck Berry fans, they're doing a documentary on his life as well. And it's one of the first in-depth ones. And his wife of all those years is going to be taking part in it as well. So that comes out in October next month. So that'll be interesting, too.
Cool.
Yeah, these films into their lives are fascinating.
Well, Steve, you said that his biography was one of your favorites because he actually wrote it.
Have you ever read Chuck Berry's autobiography?
No.
Read it. It's called Chuck Berry, The Autobiography.
Yeah.
And from page one, you can tell there's no ghostwriters. This is Chuck Berry's voice. And it's a wonderful voice.
And he doesn't sugarcoat it.
He was no saint, and he doesn't shy away from some of the kinkier
proclivities
parts of his life.
Right.
But it's one of the best autobiographies I've ever read.
Yeah.
Is that right? Wow. Okay, definitely.
Well, we're going to look for this podcast, and if they want votes, you got our vote. We want this podcast.
That means so much to me.
Really?
Thank you.
Really. And you can follow Vic. And I almost called you Vince because we just watched a Vince Vaughn movie.
I know. It happens.
And Steve said, I wonder how often Vic gets Vince Vaughn thrown
every
at
now
him.
And then.
Yes. Being a Chicagoan, too.
Yeah.
Right.
We watched this crazy little movie called A Cool Dry Place.
Yeah, it was the...
And it had the best music in it.
It's about a 25-year-old movie, and I just stumbled across it the other day. I kind of came in the middle of it, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. So I looked and found when it was going to be playing again. And recorded it, and Johnny and I watched it last night, and it's just, it's a neat little movie that doesn't necessarily have heroes and villains. It just has people going through, it's a romance movie.
But you've got to love the fact that to show the world that Vince Vaughn is from Chicago, he's got to love the blues. So the blues are playing all the time when he's in the shower. We has a great little scene where he's singing a pretty cool song. The music, I thought, was very tasty.
Yeah.
So there we go with all these recommendations.
Yeah.
My job here is done. I can go home.
We should shut up and let Ashley hit whatever you want to hit for a second. Or a little peek into the mind of our producer, Ashley. I like your taste. Hamilton, Joe Frank, and Reynolds.
It's a classic.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
She's an old soul in there, you know?
That's what I always say.
Well, good. You wear it well.
Thank you.
Don't let anyone change you.
On ABC Dunhill Records.
Oh, please. What's on the flip
side? In roughly 1973-ish.
That sounds about right.
Because that's just about the time that I segued over to the Once Big 89.
Mm. it's good when you can mark your life based on the radio station.
Exactly.
And was there a U-Haul outside, or did I stay there for a while, right? The other voice we hear is our buddy Nick.
Yeah. Hey.
All right. All right. I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because that reminds me of something. I say it every time I see this guy on television. You knew who Jimmy Dean was, right?
Sure.
The sausage dude, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know that they re-air his television show, his black and white TV show, his variety show?
No, I didn't know that.
It's wonderful.
If you could just find one episode and watch it and tell me if Matthew McConaughey isn't Jimmy Dean. It is the freakiest thing. They stand the same. Their delivery is the same. The accent is exactly.
That's true.
And it's like, whoa.
I've never noticed that. I haven't seen a lot of footage of Jimmy Dean lately.
Besides that, you got Ralph the dog.
Yeah.
The first Muppet on television was on the Jimmy Dean show.
Actually, not true.
Okay.
The first Muppet was a version of Kermit, and it was for the Crammel Milk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You are just full of it.
Excuse me?
I mean, trivia.
So we were thinking of you the other night when we stumbled on this movie that was from like 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of it. I came in the middle of it, kind of liked a little bit of it, seemed like a sweet movie. Found it, recorded it, and it was called a...
Cool Dry Place. Vic Vaughn. Vince Vaughn.
And Monica Potter, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Very good. Yeah. And whatever happened to Joey Lauren Adams, who was chasing Amy?
She, you know, I don't know what happened. I love her.
I did, too.
And, I think she's great in Chasing Amy. She's great in Dazed and Confused.
Because she was kind of like
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, she dated Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I... knew nothing about any of the people other than Vince Vaughn in this movie. And watching it, I thought, boy, she is so natural.
She's great. She's always wonderful. Been great. Yeah. I've always liked her.
She's got that scrunchy Renee Zellweger look about her.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because they're both in a couple of movies together.
Really?
So, yeah. They're both in Dazed and Confused.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Renee Zellweger, you can barely see.
Yeah.
She got cut from a lot of movies, but she's in there.
Hmm.
But who was the director? Because I'm going to give away a scene from the movie that impressed me. This is a weird scene, and I'm not giving away a whole lot. Vince Vaughn.
I got to tell you, I don't remember this movie at all.
Well, this is a scene where Vince Vaughn and
Joey Lauren,
they're in an intimate situation
in the back of a truck,
and it has nothing to do with the plot of the movie. But she says, "Oh," and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry. Am I hurting you?" And she says, "No, I have a cramp in my leg." And it was just one of those humanizing, bringing you into their relationship moments. And I thought, what a nice touch.
It didn't
advance the plot. It just brought you into it.
This was the minute and a half where they were trying to make Vince Vaughn a sex symbol. I mean, you know, they showed him without his shirt on. And he was not bad there.
Yeah, I don't... his career has just been so strange.
Yeah.
You know, following him around and you know, like right out of the gate with Swingers, you know, he stole that movie basically.
Yeah, Wedding Crashers.
And,
I agree.
Not a fan.
That might have been one of his darker moments.
Yeah.
Well, he's made a lot of terrible movies.
Yeah.
I would be the first to admit that Vince Vaughn has made some terrible decisions in the past.
And if he's listening, we'll tell him how to get in here.
Yeah. I don't remember the movie you guys are talking about. I mean, I remember seeing it. I remember when it came out.
Yeah. Of course you saw it.
But I just don't remember anything else about it.
Do you know how many movies you've seen this year?
No.
Do you not
most
want
of them.
To know? Yeah.
Most of them, yeah.
And we were talking about Once Upon a Time and the fact that we saw that. And it's the first time I've seen a movie where I actually watched a violent scene through my toes because we were the first time we'd gone to a reclining theater.
Mm-hmm.
Does the village that you attend, do they have the reclining seats there?
In one theater they do.
Okay, because this was our first experience in Florida. So I was able to hold my foot up and open my toes and watch the violence between my toes. I thought, that's kind of cool. That's a
but
first
you know what I'm not a fan of? You go up, you're getting your ticket. Okay, and what seat do you want? Let me into the damn theater.
Well, all theaters are doing that.
Is it
why?
Controlling
it's
the crowd?
It's assigned seating. I don't know.
Do you have a seat that you go to? Do you?
Well, I mean, the theater that we go to, you know, the one that we go to in Skokie, that's the one we go to pretty much every
week. Us too.
It's usually the first row where the bar is, not on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
First, where the bar is, the first three seats.
Oh, we go to the very last row and on the edge.
The first three seats. Yeah. So.
Yeah. The theater that I do my film club at.
That's a beautiful theater.
The Rosemount, the AMC Rosemount 18. And it's currently under construction, which is why I haven't done a film club in a month. But they're putting in those seats in every theater at the Rosemount. Hmm. All the reclining seats and all that stuff.
Is it just at the point where that is what they feel will allow them to compete with the home systems?
Well, I mean, I happen to be a big fan of the reclining seats. I think they're great. And we were just there. We were in the Dolby Theater just this past Saturday watching Matrix on the big screen again. And by the way, 20 years later, and that movie still kicks ass.
Yeah.
It was groundbreaking when it came out, and it holds up. I mean, watching that thing in the Dolby Theater on Saturday was a thrill.
Did we get to see it in Dolby 20 years ago?
No. Well, I mean, they released it in 70 millimeter at one point.
Yeah.
But this, you know, the new Dolby, those theaters, I normally don't tell people to go see something in IMAX if they don't have to because they're just trying to get $3-4 more out of you per ticket. But I make an exception for those. The Dolby Theater is beautiful. It's beautiful. It's top-notch sound. I mean, you can't get better sound than that. And the visuals are unbelievable. The projection is unbelievable. And anytime you can get a chance to go to any of the Dolby Theaters, they're only at AMC. They've got one down here at River East. There's one in Skokie, the one that we go to. There's one in Rosemont. There's a whole bunch of them. But just look for the Dolby Theater. And it's the best projection, the best sound that you can get. Oh. And that was amazing watching The Matrix in that theater. Having not seen it on the big screen for almost 20 years. And I love that movie.
I do too.
My God, I love that movie so much.
But I love Keanu Reeves.
I do too. It's his birthday.
Is it really?
Well, yesterday was.
Okay. Well, we watched all the John Wick movies before we went to see the latest, and he was.
Yeah, we're doing a big tribute to Keanu this morning.
All right.
In honor of The Matrix being re-released, and in honor of him turning 55 yesterday.
Yay! Okay.
I know we're up against the clock, but one quick theater thing or movie thing that we saw. Watch the documentary, I Am Patrick Swayze.
Oh, I've seen it.
Oh, that's
man!
Right.
I taped it immediately. Yes, I watched it.
Yes.
And I love Rob Lowe's comments about Tom Cruise. Yep.
And I agree with you, what you said about Dirty Dancing.
I love Dirty Dancing.
Of course you did. But what you said on Facebook about if you don't love it, you are. And I said, yes, you're so right.
It's a terrific movie.
Yes.
So.
Well, it's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. And we're out of here. Yep. 8 hours a show, and, you know, we blinked and it's over with.
That's it. Our thanks to Adam Phillips, who handled all the engineering stuff, and to Ashley, who kept us out of jail. And reasonably on schedule, but we're behind schedule now, so we better shut up and say, it's been fun. We'll see you whenever. And
follow us on Facebook and StephenJohnny.com.
Chicago Stories, told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio or on TuneIn. And here with the news is
Vic Vaughn.